This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Here we go. Hour two, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. C-Notes coming up at 3:20. We'll take a look at the top takeaways here from yesterday's Cowboys game. Last Flagtober stop of the season is coming up Wednesday at Whataburger off 161 in Grand Prairie. Your last chance to get that iconic Whataburger 2024 flag. Time now for your NFL news of the day, and here's Wolchek.
All right, we'll start Cowboys. We were talking about Kevontae Turpin a little bit ago, and he didn't have a great response to Troy Aikman last week criticizing the wide receivers. Well, over the weekend, CeeDee Lamb did sit down with Jason Garrett of NBC, part of their coverage, and Garrett and CeeDee talked about Troy Aikman's comments, and here was CeeDee's reaction to it.
Well, every coach, every team, guys talk about eliminating the noise. Mm-hmm. You try to do that. Focus. Mm-hmm. Let me just tell you what the noise is. One of the greatest players in this organization's history, Troy Aikman, comes out and says, the Cowboys wide receivers don't run good routes. CeeDee mm-hmm. Lamb's got to get off the ball better. When you hear that noise, how does that land on you and the group?
Me as a leader, obviously, I take it in. And we got to work. That's just more, I use it as a building block. Like if you say that our routes are lazy, things of that sort, let's go out here every week and I'm going to show you that my routes, you know. So personally, I take that as, again, constructive criticism. You can't really take everything personal in this realm of work that we do, especially some things that we can control. So if we can control it, let's go out here, work at it, and continue to get better at it. You know, so for me, I go work. I'm a hard worker. You know what I'm saying? So anything that you say that I'm not doing, I'm going to show you that I am doing it.
So you're motivated by the noise.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No
doubt.
That's great. It's a great way to take it.
Just give him the hate smile.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
You're motivated.
Yeah, you're motivated.
Your Jason Garrett has a little Lee Steinberg to it. I like that.
They got a little bit of together.
Their smiles are similar.
Similar, yeah. Garrett was really good at like smiling at you and yelling at you at the same time. Like you knew you could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're trying to get me fired.
SOB.
Yeah.
I love you, but I hate you.
Exactly.
And CeeDee certainly went out, played well, but it just, you know, that's the difference, I guess, is it's just funny that he was talking about that and the outside noise is what Garrett's thought. Like CeeDee hadn't already heard it. He didn't need to be told what Aikman said. I'm sure CeeDee really knew. And then immediately after the game, you get the Trayvon Diggs response to the Mike Leslie deal, where he just goes right up to Mike Leslie and, you know, he's nuts, bro.
I think Garrett is outstanding at this, though. I mean, that's not an easy question to ask. I think he's killing it, you know. I don't know how good of a football coach Garrett would be. Obviously, he didn't do a great job with the Cowboys.
Or the Giants.
He might have been the worst OC that year.
That was bad.
No doubt. But I think he's fantastic in this line of work. Like, the longer he goes, I think he's getting more comfortable. He's got a great voice, great confidence, and I don't know, maybe that's just exactly his perfect spot in the NFL. I thought he was a, you know, pretty good scout as well. He helped the Cowboys find a number of good players.
As far away from the sideline as possible.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. He's not even on site with, like, Rodney Harrison and coming. They got him back in studio. Like, we don't need you at the stadium. Just
do the package every week, the interview. Yeah,
absolutely.
I kind of feel like, though, if they've got you hanging out in the studio, you're an important person.
Oh, you're more important? I thought if you were on location, you became more important than the guys in studio.
I think they're trying to eliminate the number of opportunities you get by putting you on the road.
Trying to trim the fat a little bit.
Yeah, like they're always...
Get a couple of segments here and there.
They're always going to, let's go to Rodney as he interviews somebody. And that's kind of like the only segment.
And that's all we'll be seeing of Rodney tonight. Thanks, Rodney.
Yeah, thanks, Rod.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Rodney did a good job with us yesterday.
Great job with us.
Good job, Rodney. Then there was the craziness that happened in Indianapolis, back and forth game, Texans and Colts, but there was a...
Hey, how about the witching hour in general, dude?
The witching hour was an MVP yesterday. Leading into Halloween,
like,
it did
tired,
not miss.
I got tired, Wolchek.
Yeah, so Anthony Richardson pulled a move that I personally had never seen before.
This
is incredible.
In professional football. Like, I've seen this happen in high school, but Anthony Richardson is running around. They're in the red zone. A second down play has just happened, and he taps the side of the helmet, which universally in the football world is like, I'm out. I'm tapping out.
I'm banged up.
I'm hurt. Something's going on. Joe Flacco, get in here. So now Flacco runs into the game, hands it off to Jonathan Taylor on third and goal from the 23. Taylor gets 5 yards. Colts settled for a 37-yard field goal. After the game, Anthony Richardson asks, like, what happened, man? Everything okay?
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
I ain't gonna lie. I kind of wish you would have. That's one of those. Just go ahead and chalk that one up for. I got a lie here.
Oh my gosh.
It's a tough thing to, especially after the half that he had. What was he, 2 for 15 for 80 yards in the first half?
Yeah, he finished 10 of 32. For 175 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and 5 sacks.
The numbers on him are bordering on, as Brad Sham would say, unprofessional.
I mean, it's like Jamarcus Russell type of bad when it comes to throwing the football.
Every graph you see of quarterbacks and where they're placed, he's on the far bottom left corner where there's just nothing good about the way this guy's doing it. I saw Austin Gale put something out where Anthony Richardson ranks 222nd in completion percentage among the 225 quarterbacks since the year 2000.
And who's the guy ahead of him? Ryan Leaf, right?
Yes.
Of the Cowboys.
Of the Cowboys. How funny is that, that it's the star as his...
And that was terrible. I remember watching Ryan Leaf play with the Cowboys. That wasn't fun. Okay. Ryan, I know you remember that.
Too well.
That was brutal.
I have the three quarterbacks who have been worse from a completion percentage standpoint since 2000 than Anthony Richardson. There's three of them. Tim Tebow is one.
Oh, gosh.
Not surprising at all. Mike McMahon of the Filthy Eagles is second to last. And your dead ball's last worst completion percentage since the year 2000 is Akili Smith.
Oh, the company that he's in here, bad. Bad. Yeah,
Jamarcus Russell was better.
Jeez.
Curtis Painter was better. It's been really bad, but I've never seen the tap out thing. I've never seen that. I'm so tired.
It's a bad move. And now the Colts are evaluating everything since he's been struggling. Do they go back to Flacco? What are they doing here? He's still in line to start Sunday night against Minnesota. But Shane Steichen, I mean, for the locker room, when your quarterback's tapping out on a third down play at the 23-yard line, you're trying to put up points. I mean, and yeah, somebody just texted in, like, Donovan McNabb was puking in the huddle during the Super Bowl.
But that was just beer, you know.
Just beer. Just sweat.
That wasn't actually exhausted from doing anything.
It's a bad look. Can you imagine if Dak Prescott did this?
Anthony Richardson was at least running around.
I think there's something to be said for it's more like a running back, you know, every time he snaps the ball.
Yeah.
It's a scramble. It's a run. It's a...
seeking contact.
Running for my life. Yeah, you know, it's just totally different than any quarterback. I can't remember it happening either, but... You know, and the other thing is when you're getting chased like that, the adrenaline kicks in, makes it harder to breathe. I don't know. I'm making excuses.
So he's a pro athlete.
So I just told Shane I needed a break right there.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to call a run play. So can you just hand the ball off?
Do they have break rooms in NFL stadiums? They have break rooms?
What the hell is going on?
Do we have breather rooms?
In the blue tent, he could have gone and sat in there for a little bit. Put the blue tent up.
Oxygen mask.
Samuel, yeah, he's out there running around. He just had pneumonia.
What would you have said there if you're him? Because I was just going to go, had the wind knocked out of me.
That's perfect.
You know? I would have gone right into the blue tent.
Wind knocked out. Yes, you go right to the blue tent.
Sit there for a couple breaths. Yeah, okay. And come back.
Yeah. He's asked the doc if there's anything you can do for the chronic vaginitis that you have, and then he'll say no, and then you'll just trot back onto the field and lose the football game.
What? Okay, he had 17 attempts against zone coverage. I was just looking at his numbers. It's wild.
He was 10 of 32.
Okay, what do you think his numbers were against zone coverage? Which you should be able to complete passes against zone coverage,
I'll say he completed four of his 10 balls on the day.
He had 17 attempts against zone coverage.
Four of 17.
Five.
Three.
Five of 17 for 48 yards. Man.
It's big time.
Yeah.
How many rushing yards did he even have?
It's so funny.
I mean,
he was running around a lot, so he was super duper tired.
It's the only one he's got is just a run.
Over 10 air yards, he was 4 of 20 for a 120. How about that?
I mean, that play told me, I've seen enough. I'm good here.
There you go.
I think we know you're not the franchise quarterback that we were hoping you would be.
And that's why you just keep playing him. You don't do the Flacco thing. You keep playing him. This is the boom or bust factor. It's almost better this way. It's like either be awesome or be terrible and lead me to my next top five pick here.
Yeah.
We will suck so bad this year, we'll draft your replacement right now.
Yeah.
We really don't want to make a Daniel Jones mistake.
Yeah,
so we're not
going to give you a bit yet. We're just moving on. The other thing that was just, what the hell are you doing on the football weekend? Tyrique Stevenson. Okay, amazingness that happens at the end of this game.
Well
Commandos
said, yes.
And the Bears. Incredible moment. Jaden Daniels goes ahead, hits scary Terry McLaurin. They're set up for a Hail Mary.
On Stevenson, by the way.
Yeah.
That play is on Stevenson.
Yeah. So
if he was Anthony Richardson, he'd have been way too tired to throw that ball.
He'd been running around too much.
I think he ran 41 yards before chucking it.
He would have tapped himself out. Mariota would have had to throw the ball. You're right. Absolutely. But so now they throw the Hail Mary. It doinks off Stevenson. It pops up in the air. And Noah Brown, former Cowboy, hallelujah, Commandos walk it off. But during the play, there is a video from a fan in the stands that is showing Tyrique Stevenson turned around, talking bleep to the fans there in Washington. Then he turns around. The receivers are already at the opposition's, 20-yard line? And now he's trying to chase and find, where's my guy? Where's my guy? Ends up locating the football, hits the football, tipped up in the air. Here comes the touchdown for Noah Brown. Really bad moment. He puts that on social media to Chicago and teammates. My apologies for lack of awareness and focus. The game ain't over until zeros hit the clock. Can't take anything for granted. Notes taken. Improvement will happen. Hashtag bear down.
I don't think his pre-celebration cost him the play, did it? He might have ended up in better position.
I don't know.
He ends up running and being the one that tips the ball to the guy.
But he got his hands on
it. I think Noah Brown was his guy, and Noah Brown's left behind him. Nobody's even covering him.
Let's go to the tape.
I'm watching the play here. I get what you are saying, Dawson. I imagine the play here brought us right is every defender has a guy. Like, somebody had to be on Noah Brown, and I'm assuming the guy who wasn't is the guy who was just chirping at the fans for the first half of the play after the snap.
I agree. I think Noah Brown was his dude.
It's a terrible look. It's an all-time, just a hilarious moment.
I think
moment.
He undercut the route. I think he was
did. He's the one who hits the ball that allows
but he was
Noah
in the
Brown
front.
To,
he went to the front. If he's got
his bad DB hands, I think, is the ultimate culprit, as fun as the celebrating cause, the Hail Mary narrative. I don't think it took him out of position because he had so much time to run over there.
But 806 ever flipped.
But I don't know.
Your
totally
TV,
right.
The TV
you
copy
right.
was
weird. Yeah.
But the footage that you see, it's just hilarious.
It's hilarious. No, it is. Yeah.
The way that it all happened. But the Commanders get another win.
And if you didn't know any better, Dan Quinn just won the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh, the reaction. And Caleb Williams, there's also like video of him watching the whole thing. But it was a historic last 30 seconds in NFL history. I mean, it was incredible what ended up happening with the Bears taking the lead.
The entire fourth quarter was ridiculous. They're handing it to an offensive lineman and fumbling at the goal line.
Yeah,
I was amazing. Listening, I guess, to the pregame, and Chief gave it to the Bears. And then we went to break.
Yeah.
So did Tyrique Stevenson.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, there's 25 seconds left. I'm pretty sure the Commanders just lost.
You're in it together. Yeah, according to ESPN Stats and Info, Daniel's game-winning Hail Mary made Commanders-Bears the first game since 1977 where each team scored go-ahead touchdowns in the final 30 seconds. That is crazy. The other one was the Bears over the Chiefs, 28-27.
But, I mean, dude, you're talking about Caleb Williams. I don't think he had his fourth completion of the day until maybe the end of the third quarter.
Yeah.
It was as disgusting of an offense as you'll ever see outside of a big DeAndre Swift play where they're able to get their touchdown on. But for the most part, it was a total slot fest.
I think Caleb Williams has that Dak gene, you know? Fourth quarter comes on.
Yeah.
Here we go.
It's time.
When the game's just far enough out of reach.
You're going to claw with your fingernails to get just back in the game.
He's not doing anything with those fingernails.
I think I saw the stat. He was pressured 52% of his dropbacks.
Oh, I believe it.
In that game.
That's a guy who probably could have tapped his helmet and said, Coach, I need a breather. Yeah. He was running around all over the place.
Oh, true alpha. Not going to do that. All right. National Tight Ends Day was yesterday as well. And the tight ends balled out.
Hey, what did I say in the pregame show, Broadus? George Kittle is going to really appreciate the fact that it's National Tight Ends Day. He's going to wear this, and he's going to rock this.
He was the top tight end, 6 catches, 128 yards, a touchdown in total. Tight ends had 177 catches, according to NFL research. 14 different tight ends had touchdowns. That's a single-day record.
You know, it really, this is, the run game stuff has been really, really bad, but, like, this is, to me, the biggest indictment on Zimmer to this point. I mean, there's a lot of indictments to start games, to start second halves. You're consistently giving up points. But for your plan against a team that who's a lot of their skill guys were down, banged up, your plan for just go Donovan Wilson on George Kittle?
I said that. I was on a couple of different shows this morning, and
yeah,
that's the biggest criticism I have is during the week, you knew that their skill guys were compromised. Their wide receivers were compromised. And the one thing that you couldn't let happen was that Kittle beat you in this game.
Because, Kittle and Debo, the two guys to
you felt like that maybe Debo would there probably be some trouble there, but Kittle, you cannot go into that game letting George Kittle beat you. You just can't.
No. And they did.
Yeah.
They did.
At the end of the game, they started playing, you know, when they needed to try and get some stops, they started putting McQuamu on there. They put Lewis on him a couple times. You know, they were trying, but it was the damage had already been done.
Right.
That's an indictment of your coaching staff right there that you know, that one weapon, like I say, Bill Belichick, he would say this about playing Jason Witten. He goes, everybody else could beat me. I ain't let that guy beat me today. You know, and that's unfortunate right there.
I guess it could be worse. It could be the Jets. Jets lose again, and more just sad stats keep coming out for them. Jets scored 20-plus points, committed no turnovers, held their opponent under 250 yards of offense. From 1940 until yesterday, teams were 756-0 when they hit those three metrics. But the Jets lost to the Patriots yesterday, 25-22.
Wow.
There you go, Aaron Rodgers.
What a disaster.
Just a record breaker.
That's crazy. I thought Devontae Adams was going to fix everything.
I thought so, too.
I really did.
Shocking.
Thank you, Wolchuk. NFL News Today every afternoon, 3 o'clock here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.
I think Robert Saleh is the big winner of the last few weeks, and then certainly like the biggest winner of the weekend. Robert Saleh is sitting back going,
it wasn't me.
Any more words of Shaggy?
Join us Wednesday at Whataburger in Grand Prairie off 161. It'll be your last chance to get the 2024 G-Bag Nation flag. We'll hit the C-note, Cowboys news of the evening, and more takeaways from Cowboys defeat coming up next here in the nation. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Time now for the C-note, Cowboys news of the evening here in the nation. Segment is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life is unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one has been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Jump online at frankelfirm.com. Couple of interesting stories here before the game. Jerry Jones Jr. and Charlotte Jones, plus Shy Anderson Jr. inside an impacted vehicle in the Jones family caravan. It was stricken by a rising barricade.
Barricade. I said a barrier. It's a barricade.
What is a rising barricade?
Is it one of those things that in these stadiums now, remember when we walk into the stadium, they have that way of
the security.
You go down to the tunnel, that thing comes up and down, and it's kind of a protective thing to not allow people to make a run to try and get in the stadium. I think it's a pretty heavy duty.
Oh, it's like a gate. Getting into a garage or something underneath the stadium.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's interesting. So, fortunately, neither of them were seriously injured. Charlotte and Jerry were evaluated by team medical personnel at the owner's suite of the game. Charlotte, although, sustained a rib injury, and Jerry Jr. may have sustained a head injury like you, Wolchuk.
Hope they're okay.
Yeah. Sure they are. But just one of those
deals. Listen to Steven today. He's probably thinking, like, oh, what else can go wrong?
Right.
Yeah. What was going on with the stadium yesterday? Because also some people were walking in there and apparently just being flu stricken.
That's right. Yes. Second story
the public poop that they've got floating there.
The bigger story.
I thought it might have been the fecal matter, the human fecal matter that's in the air there per capita is larger than any city in the entire world.
You know, it was crazy because this particular illness,
you can look that up,
made you so sick that you couldn't play, but you could still totally hang out as if you were fine.
Well, you can still sign autographs and, you know, be around the guys when they're warming up for the game and whatnot.
Yeah, it's not a contagious, which is great.
It was only like a 102 fever.
No. You know, it is interesting how everybody has talked about this. I just don't think it requires an explanation if the guy's really sick, but I think they know it looks weird, so you have to make something up. Like, so you say he's sick when he's clearly not. This goes to, sometimes it's more important in the building to be friends with the decision maker instead of being the best player. And as long as this kind of stuff is happening, I don't think you have much of a chance. I guess the good news is maybe they're just doing it because it's not a big season. It's like, hey, we're not going to win anyway. Let's keep Zeke out there, because at least when people tune in, the fans know who Zeke is. That's what this is. Rico Dowdle is by far the best runner. Like, Dalvin Cook hasn't had a game as good as Rico Dowdle's worst game this year in two seasons. He wasn't good with the Jets. He wasn't good with the Ravens. Zeke's not good. You know, he had his best carry of the season last year for like 12 yards or so. But with him, go into his game log. His best game is as good as Rico's worst game when it comes to yards per attempt. You were just giving up like 30% of your rushing yards by playing these guys instead of Rico. You know, and getting everybody to go along with it at the same time. We're going to tell this illness story. If you're ill and can't play, you're laying down in a dark room. You're going, in and getting an IV. Wow, this is really bad. Our best runner, not even close, is sick. He can't play.
Didn't that happen to Zach Martin last year?
Yeah, I think it was that Washington game, wasn't it?
Where he was sick.
He missed the game.
And then all of a sudden, Brock Hoffman's got to play. Yeah. Yeah. TJ Bass got to play. And you didn't see him out there.
But I don't. You definitely didn't see him signing autographs. And
being on the field at all,
having reports that he looked just fine minutes before the news about him being stricken with the flu.
I just don't know if he's liked, you know, how likable Rico is compared to the other people. But, you know, I think that obviously a lot of people like Zeke and feel like it's important to have him in the game. So, you know, Deuce Vaughn is benchable. It's clearly you can deactivate him.
They have.
But we love Hunter Lipke, even though he never makes a winning play. People love him. We love Zeke. So it's like, after we account for the guys we love, then we only have so many spots. So now it's down to the new guy and the guy that people don't like as much as the others. That's what it looks like to me, Brian. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I'll say this. The night before the game, because there was a lot of speculation of who was going to be deactivated. You know, and I was trying to get to the bottom of it because I knew we had the pregame show. I just wanted to come in and have an idea. And I was gathering that they were going to go light at corner, which they ended up doing. You know, and matter of fact, the intention was to have the three backs and then Hunter Lipke.
Including Rico as part of the three.
Yeah, as part of the three. Yeah, it was going to be Zeke, Rico Dowdle, Cook, and then also Lipke. That was the four that they were going to go with. The deactivations, from what I was gathering, was that the hurt guys, and then Carson was going to be down and Booth was going to be down. So their intent, I believe, was to have Rico Dowdle active. That was their intent Saturday night, as I'm kind of studying and trying. I'm watching the LSU game. And I'm trying to get to the bottom because I'm seeing on Twitter, everybody's kind of going, wow, this could be the time Zeke could be inactive and all that. And I'm like, let's see what's happening here. So, you know, I just took the opportunity to start texting people in the organization and kind of got the idea that they were going to go light at corner is really where they were going to go light. So,
and then somebody found out, what are we planning to do? We're going to deactivate Zeke? Man, if these fans tune in to watch a crap game, they should at least see one of their favorite players of all time.
Yeah,
shouldn't they?
I just know that the intent that I got when I went to bed or heard on Saturday night was that Dowdle was going to be active.
And Vaughn was going to be inactive.
And Vaughn was going to be inactive. Yeah. Mm.
So the decision was Dowdle and Vaughn?
Because
Dowdle might be worse than Zeke. Dowdle is worse than Zeke because he can't even block.
Once Dowdle got sick.
Yeah.
Once Dowdle got sick or whatever happened to him, then that's where they flipped it. But like I said, I knew for a fact they were going to go light at corner.
Boy, Zeke sure did get in the chip of the year, though, didn't he?
Did he break
a rib with that shot?
Man, he may have.
Yeah, he did.
My goodness.
Brian's like, can we get that over on Bosa on the other side, please? I'm like, yeah, that sounds good.
I wasn't wishing for injury. I was just saying we need a good chip block over there.
That's a total clean play.
Yeah. It's a physical game. You play it within the rules if the other team gets hurt. You know?
Part of what I fell in love with Cooper Beebe for, he would do that a lot at K-State.
Yeah.
Okay, we go to the Athletic here, / New York Times, and John Machota writing, too many negative plays from frustrated quarterback Dak Prescott in Cowboys loss. Is he deteriorating is the topic, I believe, right? Like, are we seeing the worst version of Dak, or is it just that his surroundings are maybe the worst they've ever been?
Well, I mean,
he's got a hand in it. He's got a hand in some of the things that, you know, like I say here in a few minutes, I'm going to talk about, like, there was the first interception. He always talks about his footwork. And I got a pretty good example of something he was probably talking about, something he needs to work on. But yeah, he's struggled seeing the field at times. You know, he really, really does. And, you know, guys can confuse him that way. Coverages can confuse him. It's a shame that you would think that 9 years into the league that, you know, people, I guess you do get confused. But this bunch in red, they confuse him a lot. So, you know, that's. Yeah, if he's not willing to run and he's forcing the ball and things aren't good, you know, things aren't good.
Yeah, no, he's definitely playing extremely poorly. He is some of this stuff is just his own doing. He's erratic. His decision making is problematic. He's not on the same page with his best receiver and other receivers. Way too frequently, he's throwing like the interceptions. Some of the interceptions that he's throwing, they're head scratching, and he's not getting much help. There's no question about that, and that has to be consistently acknowledged because coaching does matter.
And the players around him does matter as well,
for sure.
But you know, he's also got to find ways to make plays.
And he's not mobile. He can't run script. He's borderline useless now. He had a play or two yesterday off script, but he's not an off script player. He's not consistently the most accurate. Like he's not been good. It's not like, well, Dak's playing well and these guys are just constantly letting him down. He's also letting his guys down too.
I mean, how good would the greatest quarterbacks do in this kind of situation? I don't know. I think that's worth asking. I don't think this team is winning a championship if it had freaking Joe Montana or Favre.
No. I just think they're not going to have consistent three and outs. They're not going to have consistent head-scratching turnovers. They're not going to have consistent get into the red zone and crap down your leg oftentimes with turnovers.
Yeah.
And they're not going to score 9 points at home versus Detroit. They're not gonna just go on scoring droughts that you're like, what is happening here? Bottom of the barrel. He looks like a bad quarterback would look in this offense. He looks like just like any other bad quarterback could look in this offense.
He had 15 interceptions 2 years ago, and maybe half of them, three quarters of them, might have been like bouncing off receivers or routes. This isn't the case now.
No, these are on him.
This is on him. Far more, and I think that worries him. I think that if you look at him right now, and you know him standing up there and answer, you know, and Clarence Hill and those guys are asking him questions, and he's having to answer. This is going back to 2 years ago when every sports show led off with Dak interception talk, and he quashed all that last year by having 9 interceptions for the whole entire year.
Yeah,
he's got 8 right now. So it's reverted back to where he was 2 years ago, but a lot of these are on him.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you can't sit there and say, well, Dan brought us, his receivers are this, that, and the other. No, there's been some decision-making here that it has led to interceptions, and that's on the quarterback.
Well, look in the AFC, you've got another quarterback who's been paid and also has had turnover issues during the course of his career. Josh Allen. Like, Burrow still has Chase, and Higgins has been banged up. But, like, you look, they overturned their roster. They traded Stephon Diggs. Their number one receiver is a rookie. They've got Khalil Shakir. Like, the guys that he's throwing to, not great. Pretty comparable, probably, what the Cowboys have right now. They just traded for Amari. That's a boost. Defensively, they let a lot of people walk. This was supposed to be one of those regression type years for Buffalo. Josh Allen's been playing like an MVP. Yeah. There's your difference. That's a quarterback that's been paid, that is elevating his play with a lesser supporting cast and still winning games and scoring points.
Yeah, those are all good points. I think Dak's playing, they're making him play faster and with less space than maybe in any time. And when those things break down and a quarterback doesn't know what to do, almost all of them in today's game do run. They're like, I don't know what to do, or it's open, I'm running.
I would like to see
him. Last night, Purdy was killing you with those.
Yeah.
Better, just give me a better play caller. Give me somebody that can help this. Because we've seen them, when they came back in the fourth quarter, those were capable plays. There were guys that were open and stuff. The problem is, this offense just does not lend itself to helping anybody on at receiver or even helping the quarterback. So it's like we'd say grab back. It's like, oh, well, hey, it works here. It works here. He never goes back to the plays that work for him. He don't. I mean, you can't tell me that final drive that he didn't try. Why don't you go back to the plays you ran? You should have marked every one of those plays you ran the two previous series before that and say, San Francisco, see if you could cover these plays. You didn't cover them the first time. Let me go back to them. Let me go back and see if I could get CD on the move here and get him the football.
I think that's totally fair to look at the coaches, to look at the teammates as well. But I think those that have been critical of Dak all along and told that you were either an idiot or didn't know how to evaluate or you were biased for one reason or another, they want their recognition at this point. Sure. I don't blame them.
No,
they were called haters.
Yeah, it's amazing how split everybody is on this guy. But like I say, I look at him, and when I do see some plays that they made or they have made, and it gives me some hope that maybe that if somebody else was coming in here and creating separation and not letting this receiving core get just covered up, maybe they're not good enough. Maybe that's the problem. This receiving core might not be good enough. But man, I'll tell you what, they made a couple of plays last night that led me to believe that, hey, with some better play calling or better design. Hell, the general manager even said they need better design, you know? And we're not calling him a football guy at all, are we?
No.
No. We're saying, hey, this guy's not a football guy, but he's saying the same damn thing we all are.
Mike McCarthy press conference is coming up at 4:00. We'll see what he has to say. Krusty's Corner is next, though, Brian.
Let me talk about some of the other things I saw in this game. We'll do that next.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Thank you, Cowboys fans out there here on a Cowboys Monday. We're doing our best to talk through it. And it's time now for the former Cowboys scout and NFL executive to give you film takeaways. Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's Brian.
Thank you very much, General, and thank you very much to Reliant as well. Appreciate them being with us. And my headset's messing up a little bit here. Got it right. There we go.
Right on. We do have the Mike McCarthy press conference coming up at 4:00.
Yes, 4:00. Film takeaways from watching the film this morning. I'll start with the interceptions, if I could, with Dak. And I mentioned about Dak's footwork, and I think his footwork played in the factor of the first interception he had. I know that we all think about that Steele got beat inside by Bosa on that particular play.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of things about this that I want to really talk about, though. The scheme calls for Steele to single block Bosa, who sets up to the outside. And I felt like that Steele was in pretty good shape. If Bosa stays wide on him, he's going to be just fine. He'll just kind of carry them, hold him there. And then they'll have the opportunity to get the ball down the field. This is where they get into a little trouble. Once Bosa goes inside, Steele can't handle that move.
Right.
And we've seen that before with Steele. He has trouble sometimes with the inside move. Okay, this is where maybe the lack of Cook playing for you might have hurt you. Because they needed a hero block there, and they didn't get a hero block. And when I say a hero block is that he was set to that side of the formation. So he was looking inside for any pickup. And then if his guy doesn't come, then he can go out into the route.
Which is what he did.
Yeah. They needed a hero block.
Use the peripherals.
Yeah. We've seen it before with guys like Zeke, Dowdle, others have, you know, when, or even Deuce Vaughn this year, when all of a sudden you're there, be a football player. And Cook is set up and he has an opportunity to help Steele with Bosa on that. They don't get the hero block there. If they get that block, they have an opportunity. Okay, the problem I mentioned with Dak's footwork on this, when he's dropping back, instead of dropping straight back, he drops back to his right. So he's dropping back in a way that it's carrying him towards Bosa. So instead of staying straight back in the pocket, his footwork carries him to the right. So he's angling right coming out underneath from receiving the ball there. So if he goes straight back, he has probably a better opportunity to step forward. That ball was all arm. His feet.
He left his feet.
His feet, everything was so bad. He was so wide open on the throw that he could not get anything on the football. And like I said, he could have used a block, could have got a hero block there, might have helped him. But they were also like Dak's footwork and his ability to where he set up left him completely wide open, and then it all became just arm.
I wonder if he was drifting to the right a little bit because Guyton gets beat pretty bad, it feels like, and he ends up recovering enough.
Yeah.
But Dak, like, there's a point there in the middle of his drop back where if you freeze it, it looks like the guy coming off the left tackle is going to blindside sack Dak. So I'm wondering if he felt that and drifted towards Bosa.
I think he started off, if you look at when he takes it, if you look at the play, him, he immediately starts to his right.
It was just off the jump.
I think off the jump, his drop carried him to his right is where, we'll look at the, if you'd like to.
With the all 22, you definitely have a copy.
Yeah, I do. And so, you know, it's a situation where there's like, okay, now you got that problem. I mentioned the route with Tolbert. We were talking about it earlier. A little smash route, the pivot route down. There's nothing holding Brown. There's no route through the middle of the field that's holding Brown the safety. Mm-hmm. It's just Turpin running a vertical route down the left sideline. Brown's got nothing holding him in place to make, you know, to like it allows him to get over because there's no combination there to give Turpin any space out there. Yeah,
the safety's not in any conflict, so he can just easily float over to Turpin.
Easily,
that's the only guy.
As long as that ball was hanging, it was easily allowed him. So there you go. Maybe a little design right there. How about a route? How about run Tolbert through the middle? Angle him to maybe make it a threat over there so Brown's eyes have
safety's
to sit. Got to hold him up. All right. The second Prescott interception. I didn't like the call at all from the head coach here. This is a high-risk pass with a little margin for error. And Prescott was moving to his left. I mean, he completed a ball earlier in the game where to Lamb when he was running to his left and Lamb was coming.
That was nice.
Dragging, and he threw it back inside, and Lamb made the play right there. But this is a completely different route in what you're looking at. So here's Dak. This ball has got to, as you're moving left, the way the separation works and with the boundary the way it is, you're running basically from the right hash into the sideline there. And now there's not a lot of room for Lamb to have to work or adjust. So, but Prescott, if you're going to throw that pass, it's got to be you get there, one, two, you get square, and you throw it. He took one, two, three, and kept drifting on it. And now all of a sudden it allowed the coverage to get onto Lamb. Lamb's got no space to work on. If Prescott can't get the ball, because you see Lamb raise his hand like, give it to me now, you know, and there was that separation, give it to me now. But Dak had to square up to get the ball. So instead of, if you can't get the ball out quick, you just need to throw that thing away. Throw it into the stands. That was a mistake on Dak right there. His body didn't get turned enough to get anything on it, and then his decision to make the throw instead of throwing it away cost him his interception. I thought it was a bad play all around. I think it started with the call from the head coach, though. Yeah. And that situation is a bad.
Yeah, but Dak could save that with better ball placement, a quicker decision,
Quicker decision, quicker to throw the football. Yeah, but it didn't work out because, you know, maybe the lack of mobility. We talk about Dak not being able to run very well. Him going to his left. Him having to get his shoulders around to try and throw the ball. They needed that ball to be out there a lot quicker than it was. All right, Lamb's first touchdown in this game. It was really a nice play. They go max protection in there. When they say max protection, they're keeping the tight ends in. Ferguson's going to help Guyton on Bosa. That's exactly what you got to do right there. Don't let Bosa make a play on you. An excellent clearing route. Here we go now. We're talking about clearing routes. Tolbert, Turpin make that happen. It's like they, it appears to be man coverage. Mustafa and Ward are confused, and neither one end up going with Lamb coming across. So here's a route, and then Ward just stays in place. Here's Lamb running right by himself. Nobody picks him up on the other side of the field. My guess it was Ward because everybody else was playing man coverage. Ward stayed on that side of the field. Good job by the Cowboys clearing space, though, and allowing CeeDee to come back across and make the play. The second touchdown, this is really a nice outside-inside release by Lamb. There's been a lot of talk about these guys' inability to run routes. But here you are. You get a guy that all of a sudden you get Lamb has got the him where he goes. He takes him outside, gets the corner to move a little bit, and then goes back to his inside. And you get Brown is flying forward because he's attempting to get to Ferguson, who's motioning into is going into the flat.
Yeah, he's in a dead sprint, snap motion. Yeah.
But they switch the routes. What happened is that Ferguson and Lamb switched. So now you have the coverage is different, and they get the coverage how they want it. So
the two guys run into each other.
Brown and Green, exactly. They collide. It's a great release by Lamb, wide open for the touchdown. Okay, the Turpin drop.
Hey, but credit to design there. Like you can see what happens when you have a design that works for you. Yeah. You got guys running wide open.
Yes. Yeah. That's the both the touchdowns have been plays that were that gave you that opportunity. All right, the Turpin drop. I honestly don't think Prescott could have put the ball any better spot for Turpin to catch it. Turpin's just not used to catching balls over his head. I think that's the problem with that. I thought his hands might be a little late and they could have been a tad, but not, I mean, initially I thought, man, his hands were bad. That, and they're a little late, but they were just not fully late, but just maybe a tad late to get him into space.
Or
to
can make that play. He made an incredible touchdown catch against the Niners last December. In the end zone, he gets up. He's ecstatic. But I don't think you can bet on a special teamer essentially making that catch.
Yeah, he just doesn't have the ability to high point balls.
Right.
That's the thing about this. I mean, you want to be able to go and. You go get that ball. I mean, we've seen, how about the time, many times have we seen, you know, receivers along the sidelines? I mean, remember Michael Gallup, high point football.
Tolbert's done it this year.
Exactly. Come down with the ball, both feet in bounce. I think the feet would have been in bounce, too, if he had made this.
Okay, because that's what we talked about last night. Yeah. You weren't sure if he'd still be
sure
in.
I wasn't sure. But, he would have come down and bounced. I believe he would.
Wow. Yeah, I wasn't sure last night either. I thought it's some person in that decision-making chain has to step up and say, but why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
If that's a decoy, fine. We're not actually throwing it down there.
Yeah.
It makes no sense in the game management.
Yeah. On the fourth down play, can I come back and have some time for defense?
I don't think Mike's going to be on time anyway. So okay. Just take it until he shows
up. Okay. We'll go to a break. Let me do this real quick. You want to go to break real quick and come back? Okay. Go to break and I want to come back and talk about the fourth down pass and then maybe do a little defense if that's okay.
Okay. Mike McCarthy will be 10, 15, 20 minutes, an hour and a half late for his presser. So Brian's coming back with more film takeaways. Krusty's Corner continues coming up next. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105 through the Fan.